services, and organizations that benefit you as a citizen of Forsyth County. Welcome to Empowering You, your host, Brian Anthony.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Empowering You. I'm your host, Brian Anthony. Empowering You is a show where we highlight local nonprofits that service and provide services for you, the citizens of our local area, our regional area, and our state. We also spotlight some of our local entities on a monthly basis for updates, like the City of Winston-Salem, Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, Forsyth County Health Department. And we also focus on the title of this show, Empowering You, by talking about and discussing empowerment with Forsyth Women's Magazine editor and publisher, Brooke Eagle. If you happen to miss any portion of the program, don't forget, we have our podcast on our website at WSNCradio.org. Simply navigate to the media page and click podcasts. You can also hear this program if you are out of range of our signal or just traveling, whatever the case may be. You can download our free mobile apps at WSNC.org. 90.5 FM through your device's app store, whether that be Apple Store or Play Store. All right, as with customary for our show here at Empowering You, we have one of our local entities, and it's time for one of the monthly updates. And I'm not sure this is a perfect time to start talking again with the Forsyth County Health Department. And we have the executive director, Joshua Swift. I keep wanting to call you Swift. Joshua Swift in the studio with us today. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Happy to be here.
Good, good. You're a busy man right now. A lot of stuff going on health-wise in our community. Some people are probably brushing it off the shoulder like, oh, here we go again with COVID. But as we talked off mic, I have been a victim of it, and it is real. And I can tell you now, don't assume because we've been out of the woods for some time that this is not that time of the year where you really have to protect yourself. The public health COVID community level is now at a high level, which means what for us?
Well, I mean, basically, it means that it's recommended. It's not required, but it's recommended that people wear a mask indoors. Mm-hmm. So we're telling people, you know, no, there are no mask mandates now, but we tell people to make the decision that's best for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would encourage especially people who are immune compromised, older, or just have some health conditions that put you at higher risk, mm-hmm, to wear a mask. Also, if you're going to an event, especially indoor event, thousands of people, maybe you're going to be sitting side by side with each other. Mm-hmm. Lots of people probably be encouraging you to do that. And most important, to get your vaccine, get your booster.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's time for a booster. Now, I wasn't a big fan of it, but I am now because I know this stuff is still here. I was kind of alarmed in addition to me catching it, but over the 4th of July weekend, just looking around the country at all the 4th of July events as people get back to life, as we've been talking about over the last couple of months. Essence Festival in New Orleans, some of the 4th of July celebrations. As I'm looking at news accounts of these events, I'm seeing so many people not having masks on. And I've heard some alarming stories of people coming back from these events with sickness from COVID. And I've heard a couple of people that I knew personally in circles that have passed away here recently. So where are we in terms of this particular strand of COVID here in our community? And what's your assessment of that?
Well, you know, first, that those new variants are the predominant variants right now, that BA4, BA5, and it's shown that it's more transmissible. Mm-hmm. Even if you've been infected before with COVID, even if you've got the vaccine before, it's more transmissible. It spreads quicker and faster. Over the last 2 weeks, mm-hmm, we're pretty level on the number of cases. We're about 700, 800 cases a week. Mm-hmm. That's lab confirmed cases. That's right. Not people that go and get a test and come home and do their own test. That's mm-hmm. people that go get tested at CVS or get mm-hmm. tested at their doctor's office or mm-hmm. at the location at Union Baptist Church or Novant across at the mall. So those places, that's the numbers we get. We don't get the at-home numbers. So cases are staying, they're pretty level. They're 700 or 800 cases a week. Mm-hmm. That's not as high as Omicron. That's not as high as Delta, but that's still pretty high compared to over the course of the pandemic.
Okay.
But we're seeing increases here in North Carolina and Forsyth County and across the U.S.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the at-home test kits, which I detected mine with here recently. Now, those, as you say, those tests are not being reported. Is there an estimate in your numbers that gives you an indication just how many of those potentially are out there, or you have no way of knowing?
We don't have really any way to know because we don't get a record of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard some epidemiologists speaking and some people that do that, you know, look at those statistics, and some say it could be for every one that we're reporting, there could be five or six
mm-hmm.
that we don't know about.
That are testing at home.
Yeah.
Pretty much buying tests. Wow, because those tests are available through the government has sent some out, and then you can go to any pharmacy and buy those over the counter, I do believe.
Yeah, and you can also go, we get them from the state. Mm-hmm. We bought some out of used funds that we got to get tests. We also, the state now has opened up a supply. So right now you can come to the health department on Highland Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank the Brian Hart, who's the director of our library system here in Forsyth County.
Correct.
All 10 library branches, he's agreed to house. So they have the at-home test there. You just go to the front desk
okay.
and ask for a kit for
okay.
those tests.
Is the testing still going on? I remember in the midst of COVID, there were several organizations that were doing on-site COVID testing. Are those programs still out there, or have they pulled those back a little bit?
Well, there are some outside organizations that are not related to the health department that are doing testing.
Okay.
But there's at Novant at the old, I believe it was a Firestone location, mm-hmm. the tire place at the mall.
Okay.
They are working with the state vendor Opendorf that's doing the testing there. And then there's testing that's going on at Union Baptist Church through another state vendor, StarMed.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two fixed locations where people can go most days of the week to mm-hmm. get that testing in addition to doctor's offices and pharmacies.
Are there means for nonprofits or church organizations that might want to host testing sites? Is there a mechanism in place where they have to go through the health department to be able to do that, or how is that done?
Well, there is, you know, people could reach out to the health department if they're interested, and we can connect them with the state has vendors
mm-hmm.
that could possibly work with them to get the testing done.
Okay.
But the biggest thing I would tell people is, you know, early on with the testing, it was so new. So novel, you know, we were encouraging people to get tested. But as you've probably seen yourself, mm-hmm. I've seen it because I had COVID last December.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of those things that, you know, probably needs to wait till a certain day, if that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. I get it.
I mean, I like it. And that's the beauty of the at-home test. Like we mm-hmm. tell people, I mean, you have the tools in the toolbox even when you don't need them, but you mm-hmm. got them.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it, even though we don't have the record of it, like I said, because, you know, at one point it was so hard to get testing.
Mm-hmm.
People were having to wait in line for hours and had to search all over to get the testing. That was a hindrance. So, you know, the beauty of having the test at home is you can get it done and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it whenever, you know, you go to church on this month, this Sunday. And then Monday you start feeling bad. It's probably not good to wait till the next Sunday.
Right. To go to
church. But we're trying to make it available. But if some churches are interested, we can, like I said, have discussions and see what's the best option.
Yeah. I think it's important for people, even if you think you just have a cold, make sure that you get tested, because what ends up happening is you brush it off as a cold, you get out and you get in somebody's face or you're around somebody and you infect without even knowing you have it. My thing, when I felt unusual, because I don't catch colds anyway, I try not to, but when I started feeling some of the symptoms that I had back in 2020, early before COVID was even announced, I said, let me go get this test. Let me check myself and see if I need to stay upstairs in my room locked up for about 5 days. And as soon as it came back, you know, I did that. I went and got whatever I was going to eat situated in another refrigerator. And I went to a room and I isolated myself. So yeah. I think that's important. I think that's important.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I did the, you know, fortunate, and not everybody can do that, but if you can, mm-hmm. separate room, if it's possible, you got two bathrooms in your mm-hmm. house, mm-hmm. you, the person that has COVID, use one, and mm-hmm. then the rest of the family try to use the other one,
mm-hmm.
wipe down things that, you know, if there's any common surfaces, because you're probably going to have to still come out and,
oh yeah, absolutely.
So I
came out with I'm not going to mention the brand, but I came out with the aerosol can spraying everywhere that I went and everything that I touched after I touched it. So, okay, let's move on. Not that COVID is not important, because it is. There's another vaccination that has been in the news here lately that is available, and this one is for monkeypox. What is monkeypox? It has probably nothing to do with monkeys.
No, you know, monkeypox is in that same family as chickenpox and smallpox.
Mm-hmm.
So it causes, you know, rashes and sores. It can be sores on arms and legs and back and chest, and it also can affect the genitalia. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, right now there's over 1,000 cases in the U.S., 10 cases in North Carolina. As of right now, on the 14th mm-hmm. of July, we don't have any cases in Forsyth County as of yet. And we got 7 health departments, got vaccine. The whole state only got 440 doses. Mm-hmm. And they distributed that to us, Mecklenburg, Buncombe, Pitt,
mm-hmm.
Wake, Durham mm-hmm. County, New Hanover. Okay. So this geographically spread across the state, and we got the vaccine. And right now, it's really a very limited supply. We only got 80 doses, mm-hmm. and it's available for people who've been in close physical contact with someone diagnosed with monkeypox.
Mm-hmm.
And this physical contact is, you know, really physical contact, not 6 feet of space like with COVID, but physical contact that could be sexual contact or just a hug, you know, mm-hmm. Anything, a kiss that could, saliva, mm-hmm. fluids. And it also, if there are, so individuals that are close physical contact are eligible for the vaccine,
mm-hmm.
Close physical contact with someone with monkeypox,
mm-hmm.
or people who have, men who have sex with men, or transgender individuals who've had multiple sex partners in the last 14 days.
Okay.
I think a thing I want to note too is we're obviously focused on that population, the LGBTQ population. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a whole swath of the population is kind of ignoring this.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing in other countries like in Europe where kids have got it now, then they go to school and then other kids get it. If you think back 2.5 years ago with COVID was primarily people that could travel to Europe,
mm-hmm.
that could travel to the West Coast. Well, it got here and then it, you know, it went throughout the population. It doesn't matter your income, your race, your So I think, you know, that could be possible with monkeypox, that once that, like I said, it could be heterosexual couples. If mm-hmm. another person had it, it could spread to that partner.
If I'm listening to you right, just the transmission of it is by contact, whether it's hugging, shaking hands, or anything where skin to skin contact is a possibility. So if I'm not even knowing sexual orientation of a person, just a friend of mine, I might be shaking his hand. They may have on a long sleeve shirt, but it may be something that I don't see. That's a possible possible transmission of that disease? Just shaking hands?
Well, not so much. I think obviously if they had a sore on their hand, it was an open sore, and you had a cut, there's possibility there. So I think, so the thing with this is it's much, with COVID, think of COVID, it spreads like if there was smoke in a room.
Okay.
You burn something in your kitchen, that smoke goes all over. Mm-hmm. And it kind of will stay in the room.
Right.
You know, you can come back an hour later after you burnt the popcorn, you're like, you still smell it. It's in there.
Yeah.
So that's there. So you know, that's the way I, you know, with COVID, like think, you know, the ventilation and the masking and things like that. This requires more physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
So, and mostly it's, like you said, close physical contact. Not so I wouldn't be as worried about handshaking.
Okay.
But again, just, you know, wanting people to
be aware.
We're not trying to
scare anybody. No, that wasn't my intent. I just wanted to get clarification on if I'm hearing properly. I knew the transmission was by close physical contact, and I wanted the most common way of people greeting each other being part of that discussion so that people would know for sure.
Oh, understand. Okay. And I think another thing to your point is there's so much information and there's lots of misinformation. We saw that with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of news. There's lots of misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, really encourage people, CDC, Department of Health and Human Services at the state,
mm-hmm.
you know, try to get your information from those credible sources versus
social media. I'll say it for you. You don't have to say it.
Yeah.
That covers that. Any upcoming events that the health department is sponsoring that we need to know about and you wanted to get into the community that hasn't been out there already?
Yeah, right now there's not many immediate events that are coming up. We have later in August, we'll be doing a minority diabetes prevention class recruitment. It'll be a graduation for that class.
Okay.
We'll be holding. And we're usually the summertime, there's not as many community, usually spring and fall are our most community events.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if people are interested, we have, you know, we have lots of programs, a minority diabetes prevention program. We've just started in the last year a men's health program, going out in the community, encouraging men to take responsibility for their health.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Howard, and I'd love to have him come on. I think he'd be a great guest for you, Brian.
Okay.
For that discussion, and really focusing on African American men in the community. So we have those programs, and just trying to get out into the community, and at the same time while we're dealing with COVID and monkeypox and these other things.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Last but not least, busy summer. Everybody's amped up for all the activity that's taking place around town, whether it's concerts. We got the National Black Theater Festival coming. We've got John Coltrane on the way in High Point. But just a reminder for folks, you know, let's not act like we're in the clear. Let's take the precautionary measures that have been in place since 2020 when it comes to COVID. If you feel comfortable without a mask, be aware of your surroundings and just practice social distancing. That would help. Be outside as much as you possibly can with events. And that, you know, when the wind blows, that kind of stirs it up. The problem with indoors is like Joshua said before, you're inside and you could put a smoke cloud in the air to still be there probably an hour later because of the ventilation in the room if they decide not to run air conditioning or that room is just not ventilated properly. So just be aware. Just be aware. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add to that, sir? You're the expert.
No.
I'm just a victim, so I'm talking from experience myself.
Experience. I was just talking to someone this afternoon. They got it. They were vaccinated. They were boosted. And They're about a little over 51 or two, good health. And he was like, man, it's rough over the weekend.
So. Yeah. The good thing I can tell you, having had it, it doesn't last as long as if you were not vaccinated. I've been in both situations before. This one hit me for a day, even though I had it for the 5-day period of time. But the fever, the dizziness or whatever hit me that 1 4-hour stretch didn't last long. So that was a good thing. Joshua Swift, Executive Director of the Forsyth County Health Department, thank you so much for your updates and always being consistent with giving this community the needed information coming out of the health department. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Hang on, in 90 seconds, we'll be right back. And one of the most important things I think we can do for our youth is mentorship. We're going to talk to our next guest and discuss that next here on Empowering You on 90.5 FM WSNC.
Community and nonprofit organizations in the Triad. A portion of our mission at WSNC is to connect the community. We have several platforms to help enhance awareness throughout the Triad of the many activities and events provided by countless organizations. Workshops, lectures, motivational speakers, healthcare screenings, seminars, you name it, it's happening in the Triad. We strive to be a major connection for our listeners and want to make sure to offer organizations consistent access to inform the public. If you're responsible for your organization's marketing and/or publicity, or you know who is and can pass this information on to them, at least 2 weeks prior to the event, send us details on organization letterhead to WSNC Community Calendar. Email it to WSNCFM@gmail.com. WSNC is an NPR affiliate owned and operated by Winston-Salem State University.
All right, welcome back to Empowering You. Hopefully you're having a great Sunday. And this whenever kids are involved, I always like having conversations about kids. We're well aware of the statistics about the family structure. In a lot of cases, there are a lot of people or a lot of kids being raised in single family homes these days, unfortunately, because I think that's a foundational piece that is important in our community. And on the show today, I have Big Brothers, Big Sisters Services, and CEO and President Shawan Gabriel. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Good. You look rested for a busy man.
I am very rested. Good night's sleep last night.
Good. So, yeah. Good to hear that. Just like all the rest of the nonprofits in the area and businesses, especially, and we're getting an upsurge of it again today, as we've heard earlier with the health department in an earlier interview. How were you guys able to, because mentoring is such a face-to-face thing, how were you guys able to make it through the bulk of the pandemic that started in 2020, and where are you now leading into the future?
You know, the 2020, as you said, the COVID hit everyone, right? Mm-hmm. We were fortunate that prior to COVID, we were, our national office, along with several affiliates, were working on some virtual work in terms of how our kids best communicate, how our kids I have young kids and they really love to text. They love this FaceTime and Zoom. So when it happened, we had already fortunately had built the platform for our bigs and littles to interact. So the numbers drastically dropped in terms of folks wanting to be involved, because we're in the business of putting people together. And it was very difficult to put people together, but you know, those that were already matched in our program used innovation to see each other. Again, Zoom and our own format internal format was utilized for folks to continue to maintain that relationship.
Okay. Okay. And the kids are technologically savvy anyway, so that's right up their alley. Good. That's great. And moving into the future, is that going to be a mainstay and another leg of Big Brothers and Big Sisters, or are you trying to get back to the face-to-face?
Well, we are back to face-to-face, but that it's still cool to have that as an option. Mm-hmm. Everybody's busy, right? You know, nobody's busy than another. Everybody's busy, but you know, folks, this provides an opportunity, a safe space that we can still continue, whether I'm traveling, I'm in Seattle, or I'm, you know, here in town, I can still see my little brother, right? Mm-hmm. And they love, the kicker for me, Brian, is that sometimes they prefer this, right? Mm-hmm. They like to be able to sit at home
right
and just FaceTime me versus, I don't really feel like going anywhere today. Mm-hmm. But I still would like to talk to you. I still like to hang out. And we found that you know, we're gonna keep that as an option in addition to the traditional face-to-face work.
Okay. Let's get a little bit into your background. You know, when you're sitting in a CEO presidential position, obviously you could have selected any nonprofit, you could have started your own. Let's get into your background and what led you to Big Brothers and Big Sisters. What was your influence?
You know, honestly, you know, I kind of like you mentioned when we spoke earlier, I grew up knowing about Big Brothers Big Sisters. I was never in the program. Mm-hmm. However, I was familiar with the work, and we all, most of us, had influences in our lives growing up, so we could relate. When I graduated college, I was headed to law school, but there was I was taking a year to do my LSATs, and there was a position with Big Brothers Big Sisters, a 1-year grant funded position. Mm-hmm. And I took it to work with kindergartens, actually. And okay. Really witnessed and, you know, firsthand the power of mentoring. Mm-hmm. And law school didn't stand a chance. I went and got my master's and stayed with Big Brothers. And I've been here for, you know, this work really for 20 years at this point.
Wow, that's great. And that's good to have a person like yourself who's vested in Big Brothers and Big Sisters through your experiences, I'm sure, with the kids,
yes,
with the bigs and the littles. And we'll get into that terminology in a minute. I thought that's cute. I like that. let's talk about society today. Our communities, especially in the inner cities, are, I would like to say, plagued with single family homes. Not good, mm-hmm. not bad, not. It's just kind of in between for me, because yeah, I was fortunate enough to grow up with both of my parents. Both of my parents were educators, so I feel blessed. But I was introduced to Big Brothers and Big Sisters and some of the other local nonprofit organizations in my city, and I got a totally different view of how other kids live and how mm-hmm. blessed I was. Now, with that being said, fast forward to this time and this, the many, many challenges that our kids face right now, mentoring is a big part of what can be one of the many fixes in this situation. How have you found Big Brothers and Big Sisters to be a part of that?
So, I, since our inception, we've been here locally 45 years and, you know, over 100 years nationally, but it speaks to exactly what you just said in terms of the main reason we were even needed was single family homes, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of our kids, I say a lot, upwards of 90% of the children we serve come from single family homes. Now, we do have some two parent homes just because, you know, everybody's dynamic is different, but Big Brothers Big Sisters help bridge that gap mm-hmm. for kids to have an outlet. Kids mm-hmm. today are, you know, you've heard people say it, you may have said it because I've said it, kids today are just so different. Well, I don't know that kids today are just so different. Mm-hmm. I think time, society's different. Kids are kids. Mm-hmm. We just got to figure out how to meet them where they are. And that, as Big Brothers Big Sisters, we continue to innovate, research, and provide, you know, tools for mm-hmm. volunteers and our staff team to help provide wraparound services for kids so that we can bridge that gap of what could potentially be missing mm-hmm. in terms of positive impact in their lives, whether it's education, social emotional development, whatever mm-hmm. that is, that's what we strive to do. But we cannot be who we were 20 years ago.
Right? No, absolutely not.
The things are different. So, you know, that's where we look to try to be that change agent, the positive change agent.
Okay. We talk about the kids, but you mentioned something interesting. Technology has been the evolution that has taken the kids to another stratosphere. We say, I believe it fully. My grandkids are way smarter than I was at that age. It's crazy.
Right.
And I look at them, right, and I have to really pay attention to what I'm doing around them and all that stuff. with that being said, then in these single family homes, because parents are working 2 and 3 jobs, there's a separation in the understanding of what a kid needs versus mm-hmm. what we experience in our own lives having to have in order for us to progress. But some of these kids are so savvy, I'll say that, because of technology. Sometimes they can be smarter than the parents. How can you, or do you talk to these kids and talk to the parents about this gap?
So when you say smarter than, right? So
exposed.
Yeah, there you go. I was about to say it's different, right?
Yeah, but it is.
Because I don't want my daughters hearing that, thinking, you know, hey, yeah, I'm smarter than dad. But you're right. Like, I'll give you an example of something that happened with us. You know, we want in our new mentoring center, we have an area dedicated to computer programming and uh-huh. that type of work. Uh-huh. Well, there's a kid who started with us, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. Uh-huh. I got a message from his dad. He's a single dad, but got a message from his dad. Oh, that's another thing. So it's not just single moms.
Single moms, right.
But yeah, so, but he's a single dad. I got a message from him this past weekend. He was in New York competing in a gaming competition.
Okay.
That was sparked here with Big Brothers, but the dad saw it as, you play too many video games, right?
Okay.
You play too many video games.
Okay.
And what the kid couldn't convey was, it's not just about me sitting here playing a video game, Dad. I'm actually learning mm-hmm. gaming. I'm mm-hmm. learning how to monetize this. But that's so foreign to us. Mm-hmm. Now, this kid's actually, his job is gaming. Uh-huh. He's 16, 17 years old.
And he's got a job gaming.
I remember us having a conversation about him playing too many video games. I was uh-huh. like, well, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
What kind of games is he playing? Like, how does that? And I talk with the kid, and the kid's like, well, I'm not just playing just to play, like, you know,
uh-huh.
waste time.
Yeah.
There's a goal to this. Uh-huh. But he couldn't
communicate that,
articulate that.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Big Brothers was that conduit of, hey, here's what he's trying to say. Here's mm-hmm. what we provided an outlet for him to do. And again, you fast forward, it's been more than 2 years, like 3 or 4 years at this point. And I hadn't talked to the dad in a while, but got a text. He's in gaming and the dad's there supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
Look at mm-hmm. him. I mean, he's in New York.
Wow.
Learning gaming. And I mean, that's when you say smarter than, again, it's more than what we can even comprehend. I would never even thought of anything like that.
Right. Because we had Hot Wheel tracks and G.I. Joes.
You right.
So that removes me from that picture. And, I, you know, I've been guilty of saying the same thing. You know, I tell my grandson, be careful about how much time you spend with gaming mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. whatever it is that you're doing with your tablet.
Right.
But then, like you said, it's a release. These kids go through so many different things that we were not exposed to because
right.
we shielded it from them.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are dealing with real life situations. So sometimes that's their escape
yeah.
from what's going on around them. So we have yeah. to be conscious of that as well, too.
Agreed.
Let's talk about the terminology bigs and littles. Bigs and littles means, I know two different levels of kids that you deal with. So could you explain that to me?
So bigs are volunteers. Those are the big brothers or big sisters, right?
Okay. Okay.
And the littles are the little brothers or little sisters. And it started again back, I think that started in the 50s, maybe,
mm-hmm.
when they started using that terminology. And it just stuck. Now all kids in our program aren't littles, all mm-hmm. big, all volunteers in our programs aren't bigs. It speaks directly to those who are matched in a one-to-one relationship.
Okay.
When it comes to mentorship, I can tell you this, just being in radio for years and being in communities and going out into communities, mentorship is tough because you have to have people that have a passion for mm-hmm. wanting to be around kids and to mentor kids. How big of a challenge is that for big brothers and big sisters?
It's always been a huge challenge, right? But I was having a conversation today over lunch with a donor about the current challenge of attracting people in general.
Okay.
Because again, 45 years we've been here. We serve mm-hmm. probably 500 or so matches a year mm-hmm. and 700 or more kids. When I say matches, I'm talking one-to-one volunteers, right? So right. What has happened over the last few years, less volunteers have wanted to step up and make that 12-month commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that
because of the current situation we're in, the COVID and the uncertainty of scheduling?
So COVID sped that up.
Okay.
But I'm talking pre-COVID. I'm talking
okay. Okay. Okay.
2018, 2019,
okay.
You saw less and less number of people wanting to commit to the 12-month kind of frame, right?
I got you.
COVID hit, and that number dropped drastically.
Okay.
But what's interesting, what's happened is, going back to what we said about innovation, people still want to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
They just want a different kind of commitment. They want mm-hmm. a different level of commitment. So we have to figure out, all right, what makes sense to use this volunteer's time,
mm-hmm.
but to benefit the kid as well? How do we make that make sense? Because mm-hmm. it can't be, well, you only can volunteer if you commit to 12 months. It can't mm-hmm. be that. That means we're going to have less people, right? But we right. still need to figure out how to better serve our kids. And so what we've done, you've seen more of group mentoring sessions. You mm-hmm. see more guided kind of curriculum-based mm-hmm. with goals and objectives that are less general than, hey, Brian is just my big brother and Brian's just going to impart his wisdom, his life mm-hmm. into mine and we'll define it later, right? Mm-hmm. We'll figure mm-hmm. it out later. It's more of, you know, here's what Shawan needs.
Okay.
Brian, let's work on these things. And there's a goal for this.
Okay.
Right. We hadn't done that in the past. So you're seeing more of that to better utilize the volunteer time. It's not necessarily less number of people, it's less number of people who want to commit to that 12 month, but mm-hmm. we still have people that want to be involved. We mm-hmm. just got to figure out how to connect them.
I also noticed there's a Biggs Council, a group of people mm-hmm. that are a part of a recruitment of volunteers.
Mm-hmm. So our Biggs Council is led. It's what it is. It's a board, if you will,
mm-hmm.
subcommittee of our board mm-hmm. of Biggs. Those that are volunteers in our program. They not only are there for recruitment. I mean, they help shape policy. Mm-hmm. They help with planning of events. What should they're there for us to lean on? What should we be doing? What should we be offering you to support? Like, what kind of training do you need? They help us vet those types of things so that we can better serve the Biggs as a whole.
Okay. Okay. What are some of the things that you're looking for when you're looking for a volunteer to mentor? What are the requirements for that? If somebody's listening now and has an interest, has gone through this whole metamorphosis of the COVID era and now has found a new purpose in life and wants to contribute to a kid's life?
Well, the first thing I'd say is something that you mentioned earlier is someone who wants to be a part of a young person's life, right?
Passion, that's passion, the first passion.
We just want you to be ready and willing to impart some positive energy, some positive efforts into the life of a child. Past mm-hmm. that,
mm-hmm.
there is a criminal background check. There are references that we need. There is an interview process. So there's a technical, you know, process that needs to happen. But none of that is important unless you have the passion and the desire to be a positive influence on a child's life.
Okay.
And that's from 18 to 80, right? So there's no
age.
We want folks, older folks, we want younger folks. And believe it or not, I mean, our parents that come in, they want, some will say, hey, I want an older big. When I say older, 50 plus. Well, I would like a younger big because this kid's very active and wants, you know, whatever. So we need bigs. We need volunteers from all across the spectrum. Men, we need more men. That's been a challenge forever. We need more. And I'll take that a step further and say we need more men of color. We need more Black men. Most of the kids that we serve are Black boys. And we want to be able to see, for them to be able to see positive Black men that look like them. Now, that doesn't mean we don't want other men. It just means that's who we serve and they want to see more of that. We know they need to see more of that. But we'll take kids, we'll take volunteers from all across the spectrum.
Yeah, that's great. As part of your mentoring programming, you have what is called a Club of Unmatched Littles.
What the cool club?
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, it's called the cool club.
Tell the club me, of since it's so cool, what is that?
So when a kid comes to us, and they go through the intake process, the interviewing the parents, the assessments, they're not immediately matched because one of the things we want to do is we want to better understand the family, we want to better understand the kid, and we want to provide programming based around some of those needs before we match them. But, you know, I changed the name of that maybe 7-8 years ago. Prior to that, we called it the waiting list. The waiting list is just doesn't sound good.
That's not good at all.
And they weren't necessarily waiting at the time. We did things with them. They were active. We did a lot with them. And so we came up with the name Cool. Like they're the cool kids. It's the Club of Unmatched Little. So, I mean, it's about programming, understanding them, them getting a better feel for us during the match process.
The challenges that a lot of kids face in families, whether they're single or full families. Let's talk about ACE, Adverse Childhood Experiences. What is that program about?
Well, so Adverse Childhood Experiences helps us to identify experiences that we had as a child that we don't know necessarily how it affects us as adults, right? So the big piece is training our big teachers. We have school partners that we've taken through this training for them to kind of understand, well, what is the stuff that I need to unpack? Like, what did I have growing up that affects my decision-making today? And then another layer of that, how can I, one, not duplicate that in the kids that we serve, right? But if some of the kids have some of these adverse childhood experiences, how do we then address those? Because they're things that happen in kids' lives, like you said, they have a different reality than we did, that we can't even imagine the things that are going through their mind when they arrive at school, when they arrive for that outing. We don't even understand the effect that whatever going on in there that's going on in their lives has on how they even feel. So we want to get, it's really about understanding life's experiences for both the volunteer, the adult, and the parents. You know, that's another, another huge one, our parents, because our parents, some of our parents get caught up in a real big bad cycle. And I've heard parents saying, I'm sure you've heard it. Well, that's what I did. That's what my mama did. That's what my daddy did. That doesn't mean it's right. I turned out all right. Well, that's debatable.
Depends on who you ask.
That's what I'm saying. So adverse childhood experiences is about understanding. And there's like there's literally a survey that we use and a training that we use. We have a couple of certified trainers on ACEs that helps unpack all of that.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Did you have any certified staff on there that, specialize in that? That's cool. I like that. All right, let's get to the It takes money to run a nonprofit, as you know. What are you, what is your fundraising efforts look like? I know you got Bowling for Kids' Sake. I know you got one of my favorites. And as a matter of fact, I saw this today and I'm like, I need to find out when this is because I'm playing in this tournament if I'm in town. The Golf for Kids.
So, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So outside of that, I mean, those two things. And then what other fundraising efforts do you have?
So the majority of our funding comes from individual donors. Like I just said, I just came from a lunch with one of our major donors. And, you know, we just raised $2 million. Wow. In a campaign a couple of years ago. And we're ramping up for another campaign starting in 2023. That's probably 75% of my job. So mm-hmm. I'm out talking with, given the mission of Big Brothers Big Sisters, helping folks understand the impact mm-hmm. And connecting those opportunities with those that are willing to support and help change the fabric of our community. So, you know, a lot of my effort is there, you know,
absolutely.
That we have some grant. We do have a couple grants, but grant funding is not how we like to spend our time. We like to connect. We're in the business of connecting people, right? That's my job. And so not just people in terms of programming, but people who are able to connect us with dollars to support the mission.
And resources, yeah. The same battle with me and the radio station here. And it's a fun challenge, especially when you're passionate about what you do.
Right.
It's an incredible sense of gratification when it does happen. It's a tough challenge because you stay up at night sometimes going, now how are we going to get from July to September here? So I fully understand that. Now you do have a grant that you award to one of your littles called the Rodrika Nicole McLaurin Grant. How did that come about? And this is an interesting story because she was part of Big Brothers and Big Sisters as a child, was she not?
So not just as a child, right? So Nicole unfortunately passed away.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so she passed away. This November will be 2 years, actually.
Okay.
Nicole, I was fortunate to work with her for a number of years. Mm-hmm. But Nicole was a little in our program.
Okay.
Back in the 90s, I guess. And she and her big sister remained in touch until her untimely passing. But mm-hmm. Nicole was a little who, in her single mom. Mm-hmm. Her mom, Miss Stefina, is super awesome. But Nicole was, you know, she was a very shy young girl. Her mom tells you the story. Mm-hmm. And having that big sister really changed her life. And her mom is great and gave her all that she can. I mean, you know, could. But having an outside kind of person mm-hmm. that gave her different experiences really changed who she was, so much so after she graduated college, she came back and she worked with Big Brothers. So she worked here for probably 7-8 years. She worked here as a person who was instrumental in getting other little girls mm-hmm. the experience that she had. Mm-hmm. She was a donor to Big Brothers, and then she was a big sister. So okay. she gave back and okay. she was a big sister. And so when I tell folks, there's not anybody that I know who's more connected to our mission here locally and done more for our agency than she did. Mm-hmm. So we established that scholarship, that grant in her honor. And we want to keep that going. As long as our doors are open, that scholarship mm-hmm. is in our foundation, is a part of our every, you know, our annual operation.
Yeah, that's a great way to honor her memory and her contributions to Big Brothers and Big Sisters yeah. through the years. Indeed. Yeah, that's great. I love to hear that. Anything that I think that I, in my researching capabilities that I've missed about Big Brothers and Big Sisters that you want to share with our audience at this point?
Well, yeah, the one thing I'll talk about just a little more, I touched on it earlier, just the innovative part. You know, Big Brothers, we're known as a one-to-one mentoring agency. And that's who we are in our core. We recognize that there's another need out there. One, namely, help training other agencies on what mm-hmm. it means to mentor. Mm-hmm. Like there are a lot of folks that say, I want to do this, but I don't necessarily want to be a part of Big Brothers Big Sisters. I get it. Everybody doesn't have to do that. But we're a resource for you to launch your program. We're a resource to help you, because at the end of the day, we want kids served, right? Mm-hmm. We've been here a long time. We have resources and we can help facilitate that growth for you. We want to, you know, I've been meeting with several school officials and we're looking forward to serving in this, in our schools differently, other than just one-to-one, the group mentoring that I talked about, the cool club that we, that we mentioned, but there are volunteer opportunities with the cool club for one, like we have STEM events. We have, you know, we have a career club as a piece of that. Like, it'd be great to have somebody like you to come in one of our sessions to talk about what does it mean to be on the radio?
Right.
Because it's not just about being in front of the, you know, spinning records or talking on this, but what goes on behind that, that changes our kids' lives, right? We need to do more of that and understand how that could impact the next Brian Anthony. Right. It's not, Brian doesn't necessarily have to be a big brother to have that impact. But for so long, we didn't recognize that opportunity. And we do now. We recognize that there's value in those one-off sessions, but a consistency around follow-up that we can definitely have an impact on the kids. And, so we have a myriad of ways for you to get involved. And we want you to call us, come see us, and, you know, we'll get you going.
Yeah, and mark me down for that anytime you need me for that. One of the biggest challenges I have in this industry that I work in is time. It, even if I wanted to commit to a child, let's say on a 12-month program, I can never guarantee in my own life my time because I'm being pulled in so many different directions. But I also take great pride in being accessible to be able to, in any given situation, come out, talk to not just kids, grown folks on, I mean, that's part of my passion because I've been blessed for well over 30 years to be in an industry where I've been exposed to some great people, some great mentors. If I start dropping names, it'd be like the BET and the NAACP awards program that I've been around and been exposed to. So yeah, please count me in on that. Last but not least, give the website address for Big Brothers and Big Sisters. If people want to volunteer, they want to make contributions, they have questions, how do they go about doing that through your website?
Well, it's bbbsnc.org. So that's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, but bbbsnc.org. And our website, you know, while it has a ton of information, one of the things that I would encourage folks to do, my number's there, 336-773-9149. Give us a call. And you know, if there's an interest level, let's figure it out. Because there's no cookie cutter way to do this. If you're interested in being a part of what we do here, let's talk about it. Yeah. I'm always willing. And you say I'm always busy. I promise you, Brian, I'm really, I'm having conversations, man.
Oh no, I know you are. If I call you and you immediately pick up the phone, that in my mind, perception wise, tells me that you might be busy, but you ain't really that busy. Cause I can't just pick up the phone like that. People get in my voicemail and they go, I've been trying to, I know you, everybody's trying to reach me because that speaks volumes for me, because that means that the station is doing what our mission says, and that's connecting the community on a major scale. Because as I continue to say this, when I first got started 4 years ago, we were hovering around 10,000 people a week. We're probably with the custom website streaming, with our mobile apps that go out across the country, and especially here where we have signal issues over by North Carolina A&T in Greensboro and into Charlotte as well. You know, we're able to penetrate that because I spend money on marketing that. I want more and more people to sample the radio station so that we are a true connection to what's happening in the Triad and Forsyth County. Now I'll leave you with this. One more challenge. Divine Nine. So many organizations, sororities, and fraternities. You mentioned something earlier that jogged this in my head. They have mentoring programs, but I'm not sure they really know how to do this. This is a great connection for your community activities. And let me start with my own fraternity, Q's. Y'all should lead the pack because we always have mentoring programs. Yep. So get in contact with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. As I always do, I get so engaged in these conversations that I have not mentioned either one of our names or who we were talking to for about 30 minutes now. So yeah, we've been talking to the president and CEO, who we're blessed to have on today, Shawan Gabriel of Big Brothers Big Sister Services, here in our community. Thank you so much for spending time with me and getting this information out, because I think in my own mind and what I've seen in my travels in this industry, mentorship is going to be huge in the generational lives of kids coming up because of how society is right now. So I appreciate you. I applaud you for your effort and your more than 20 years of existence in this program. And I think this community is in a better position with the kids and knowing that they have some place to go now.
Hey, listen, thank you for that. But in all honesty, people like yourself who provides a platform for others to hear and know, like you said, the people who may know mm-hmm. of Big Brothers, but we don't always have the opportunity to talk about the new things that we're doing or the opportunity to talk about the things that we could be doing.
Right.
Connecting those dots. So we appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, our door is always open. Thank you very much.